1, 2, 3.
Welcome to the Smartest Amazon Seller Podcast. This podcast is aptly named today because I have one of the smartest Amazon professionals in the world. I have with me the CEO of Piranha, an agency that's just been on a tear. I've got Jed Rossett. Hey, Jed, welcome.
Thanks for having me on, Scott. It's good to see you. I haven't seen you since the last time we were jamming a couple months ago.
Yeah, since 3 a.m. at the blackjack table at Prosper, which is an amazing conversation, an awesome way also to like blow through my next day where like my memory just kind of like goes in and out. That's a tradition that we've done for too many years. That's been like 4 or 5 years now where we end up playing blackjack until like 2 or 3 a.m. until we are about to fall over. Jed is always in the weeds of like some awesome Amazon stories, seeing brands just really take off. And actually, it's just been fun to see your agency take off from like, you were a small guy. You were like an everyday man. And now those days are long behind. And like, you've got stories for days. And like one of them that actually went crazy viral, I'll pick your brain on that. But this is kind of recent. Like, so there's this question is like the mafia selling on Amazon? And before your story, I heard one piece of information that like selling on Amazon can be like a form of money laundering. And people are happy to take a 20% cut on money that sells through a channel because it comes out clean or like, you know, untraceable. So you may have had a different type of experience that is a little bit more like head to head. What happened?
The short answer, and I'll preface this by saying that we've worked around Amazon for a long time, right? And there's been things that Amazon does well, things that Amazon doesn't do so well. They're a large organization, sometimes bureaucratic, right? And sometimes difficult to interact with. At the core of it, it's an amazing platform. For me, in 10 years, I've had a lot of interactions with Amazon on this issue specifically, and we'll get into it. I was blown away by one, how fast they responded, and number two, how well they did the right thing. And so what happened was back in December, one of our clients had 2 truckloads stolen from a warehouse. You know, December, there's a lot of truckloads, a lot of inventory going around for Q4. In that craziness, and I have to be careful what I say here because there's an active law enforcement investigation that's proceeding. But the short answer is 2 trucks were stolen with around $4 million worth of inventory, retail, street value. Okay. And it disappeared. It disappeared for 2 months. We didn't know what happened to it. Trail goes cold.
Was this set for Amazon or is this set for wholesale?
This was dedicated for a major retailer. So I can't say what major retailer, but if you think of like the Walmart, Target, Costco, Sam's Clubs of the world, right? It was on that list. So this inventory gets intercepted in transit, it gets stolen, and it disappears. Well, a few weeks ago, someone jumps on our buy box on a number one bestseller. And what I can say is it's in the nutrition category, in the general sports and nutrition category. I cannot say what subcategory specifically.
Don't worry about it. Like the story is already there. And when you tell me that category, there's only one thing that I think of is like, it's dense value, you know, small product that has a high price. And so it's like the logistics dream. You know, you don't have to ship a ton of stuff to get tens of thousands of dollars.
This story gets so wild. So we find some things. So the short answer is someone hops on our buy box Friday night at like 8:30 p.m. Our tools detect it. We get an immediate alert. If you're not using tools that get you alerts when your buy box gets hijacked.
What alert tool do you use?
Well, I love Smart Scout, but I also love some other tools. So like AMZ Alerts is great. 3Colts has some great stuff. I love what Henson Wu is doing. I would say like what you're building is best in class, right? I think if you're not using multiple alert tools, then you're not doing your job right.
I've never built an alert tool, so I'm just curious what you use.
The best alert tool is having the best team. So someone on our team actually noticed it and jumped on it. We look at it, they're selling the product below cost, and that's impossible, right? The brand cannot sell it for that low of a price. Think of all the problems that causes if you have distribution in, say, a Walmart or a Target. If the price suddenly drops, you lose the buy box, it causes, they move 4,000 units in a weekend and they pop, pop, make $100,000 in 3-4 days. Okay. We obviously follow, we anticipate what Amazon's going to ask, right? They're going to ask for proof. They're going to ask for test orders. We go deep. We got our start as an agency doing brand protection and enforcement for Casio, right? 8 years ago, they were our first client. My claim to fame personally, and Scott, you know this, is I'm the only guy you've ever met with two sets of twins. I have 2 6-year-olds and I have 2 8-year-olds. I have 4 girls in less than 2 years. Yes, it was a BOGO. It was a buy one, get one free. Yes, we did it at IVF and it worked. It's a miracle.
Which is why the staying up till 3 a.m. playing blackjack is actually like, we're talking to like dads that go to sleep at 10 p.m.
Yes, yes. So the cool part is they hijacked the buy box. We go deep on it. One of the crazy things that happened was we recognized that the address of the seller, because that's now public info.
Yeah, it was public in Mexico for a while. And so to find sellers, you would look at their Mexico store front. Even if they didn't sell in Mexico, it was there. And then like, I think about a year later, it became available in the US. But like, man, that was fun.
It was that conversation around the genesis of Smart Scout when we detected that loophole. You were the one who built the tool that systematically would basically give you the public-facing business address in the U.S. before it was public, because it was, you could replace the marketplace ID in Mexico.
Yeah.
Nothing against the terms and service. We're 100% on the White Hat side of the line. But if you're half Boy Scout, half Ninja, I still remember that. But this story is more like Fast and the Furious semi-trucker edition. So we discover that the business address is only 10 minutes away from where an individual was located. I'm going to be very careful what I say here, but somebody went and took pictures. They didn't trespass, but they walked around a piece of property where this inventory was held. Bingo, we hit jackpot. The stolen inventory from a couple months earlier was driven across state lines and located at a place in California. And you have stacks, you have tens of millions of dollars worth of inventory. Think major brands, okay?
Yeah.
These are brands like Hanes, Neutrogena, Dove. There is a billion-dollar brand that's connected to Nestle. I'm not going to name it out of confidentiality, but think like kids, everything from Hoover vacuums to kids' protein shakes. Now, I cannot say all of that inventory is stolen, but I can tell you that the inventory for our client specifically, the inventory, they have exclusivity across channels. And when we place our test orders, what showed up, what matched the lot code and the unique assortment that only this retailer had. So for example, if we sell a 30 serving on Amazon, and let's say we sell a 42 count in this retailer, right? Changing the numbers to protect client confidentiality and to protect the innocent here.
That's right.
But you would place an order for the 30 count and they're selling it below cost on the 30 count. Think of the panic that causes for a brand. And guess what arrives? A 42 count. And they're moving it in volume. We're talking, this is millions of dollars a month. These guys are pumping thousands of units. And the only place they could get it, there's no arbitrage opportunity. There's no other distributor they could be pulling from. They're getting it below distributor pricing. If you steal something, your cost of goods sold is zero. And I'm right. Not saying they stole it, but what I am saying is they are goods of a questionable origin.
Right.
We get pictures of their operation, okay? They have inventory that should be in a temperature-controlled warehouse that should be, you're talking tens of millions of dollars worth of inventory, right? Sitting in a junkyard, a rat-infested junkyard out in the open, just getting rain damaged. And I don't know about you, but you ran a large warehouse operation, right?
Yeah.
Did you ever cover all the pallets with tarps to hide the brand name underneath?
Never.
They did.
Yeah.
So we called the local police department. We've identified an inventory of a questionable origin. That's ours. Like, we know that's ours. Can we get a police escort to go get our inventory back? And the initial response from the police was, we can't send our officers there. That's millions of dollars. They could get shot. And we're like, you're the police. You have guns. Like, shoot back, you know?
Well, yeah. I think they just know from experience, they're like, we just can't go in without, like, knowing more.
Sure. Sure. And, you know, to their credit, once we gave them more and we gave them the hard evidence, they flipped on a dime and they've been awesome. There is an active law enforcement investigation that has been escalated. Here's what we learned, to jump to kind of some of the takeaways. One, we learned new escalation pathways that I didn't know existed in 10 years of working with Amazon. For example, did you know that Amazon has a bad actors disincentives team?
It makes sense. Like, based off of what I've heard, they really try and fight fraud a lot. The truth is I don't think this happens. You know, there's like this, there's this ecosystem of like Amazon professionals that you and I are a part of. And we talk about it. We like learn from each other. And in a lot of ways, they're probably the smartest ones. There's a whole other ecosystem that is like, think like boring 1P vendors that, like, you know, China would actually knock off, and they just kind of solve it like it's just under the radar. I have heard many times about fraud or stolen inventory. This is the first time I've ever heard something like, okay, this really makes, you know.
We dig deeper on this, okay? And we only made one phone call. So we look at the sales mix of the selling account that is moving the goods of a questionable origin. Okay, see how I'm being very careful how I say this. We contact one of the major brands, it's a $1 billion brand. And on a friend level, we say, we've uncovered a lot of evidence. If this evidence is helpful to you, do you guys also have this problem? And they said, we have had 12 truckloads stolen, right? If you just take the retail value of our 2 truckloads and their 12, that puts this north of a $30 to $50 million operation. Then if you look at how much inventory and the value, and you just say, well, if these are also goods of a potentially questionable origin, this operation is an organized operation with between $50 and $100 million worth of inventory. They own multiple warehouses. One of the key individuals who's at the center of it, okay? We do additional research on the players. And what I will say here is we uncovered individual with convictions for who did 15 years in prison, 15 to 25 years, a range. I have to give a range. 15 to 25 years in prison, multiple convictions for burglary and theft. It's a Hispanic individual. So perhaps there's connections to organized efforts in Mexico or another country. And there's convictions for possession of a firearm while being a convicted felon. Probably the worst thing that came up was a conviction for prostitution of a minor. And I'm going to say, in summary, it seems like these are really bad dudes, right? With no apparent source of income. Here's the kicker. We also connect, they have a shell company that owns a carrier with one truck, one driver, and an active US DOT license number. Jackpot. I can't say for certain, but what we can say is these goods that were stolen over here and ended up over here, goods of a questionable origin, okay? The people that are running this operation also have a carrier operation, but it only has one truck, one driver.
You know, everyone hears about robbing banks, but like, it sounds like a lot easier to lift a truckload.
You know, the crazy thing is that at first glance, it's not even apparent. Like, it possessing a, I'll call it something that, you know, like, let's say you make a smoothie and you mix some stuff in with it, right? You know, and it's a powder and you mix that powder in. I'm not saying what type of powder. I'm not saying what subcategory it's in. I'm just saying in general sense, it's a nutrition powder. That's not illegal to possess, right? At first glance. We identify an account. We take the, we provide all the test orders and documentation to Amazon and say, this is potentially fraudulent. They've removed the lot codes, right? And this is, we provide all the police report documentation. And there's additional information we provided that I'm not going to talk about here because I can't, because there's an ongoing law.
To Amazon or to enforcement?
To Amazon. So we provide this to Amazon. I went, that post was the most viral post I've ever posted about.
Yeah. So Jed posted this story on LinkedIn as he was like in the middle of it. And he had news agencies hitting him up. He had all sorts of people inside of Amazon and outside of Amazon trying to help out.
Here's the coolest thing. It escalated internally, rapid fire. And we identified four accounts connected to this organized operation. And some of these accounts are big accounts. We're talking millions of dollars at FBA, right? With perfect account health metrics that just from the outside looking in, they look like a normal selling account. Because we know where the inventory is coming from, right? And we know the mix, right? They messed with just the wrong type of investigative force. Like we put this homework together. A $1 billion brand had had people working on it since early last year. They had not cracked it. In less than 10 days, we put all the pieces together with hard, cold facts and evidence and provide that to Amazon. And the coolest thing was how fast Amazon moved on it. At one point, they had four teams working on it. It was one level below Jassy with an L10. The head of the counterfeit crimes unit at Amazon, which is a task force I didn't know existed, moved really fast. And the coolest thing about it, who stands to benefit the most from this by turning a blind eye? Amazon, because they charge platform fees and, you know, whatever else. But to see a large organization like Amazon do the right thing was so cool. They identified up to a dozen accounts. They coordinated a takedown, and we were filing the normal processes like through brand registry. Hey, this is potentially stolen inventory, right? The seller, the marketplace ID would get removed from the listing. Scott, 30 minutes later, they're back on the listing with the same marketplace ID, selling for the same low price. In your world and my world, that's impossible. That's highly unusual.
No, to me, that makes me feel like they got an insider.
I can neither confirm or deny that that's also how I felt.
Right.
It felt that way. It happened multiple times in a day. We're talking like 3, 4, 5, 6.
Seeing someone get suspended, the fastest I could expect them to get back up, 12 hours, 6 hours, maybe.
We were getting emails from Amazon's fraud department saying this seller has been removed, their offer has been removed from the listing. So there's two levels of escalation. Removing them from the listing, shutting down their seller account, okay? They were getting removed from the listing. 30 minutes later, they're back again. 2 hours later, they're back again. With multiple times in a day, we would get the email from Amazon's fraud department saying they've been shut down. We would send a screenshot back saying they haven't been removed. They're already back on the listing. Please try again. Within 48 hours, Amazon identified up to a dozen accounts, coordinated a takedown, froze tens of millions of dollars in deposits and FBA inventory. To my knowledge, this is the largest takedown that I have seen Amazon ever do in 10 years of working on the platform. And they coordinated and boom, all went to zero. The craziest thing is we have since seen a lot of unique content being put out on seller forums about these specific items, saying, oh, I was just doing some arbitrage and I had Amazon's not responding and I have all this stuff. I'm telling you, we have this dead to rights from a evidence standpoint. But what was crazy was we took a step back and said, look, we are not the criminal justice system. We are not law enforcement. This is beyond the scope of what we normally do, right? Amazon took what I think is a first, or if not, it's highly unusual. They partially gated a grocery brand for the first time that I've ever seen. And I'm grateful they did. But one, it was the right move for the protecting consumers, right? And two, have you ever heard of a grocery brand getting partially gated?
No, I know very little about the gating process. Like, actually, I know some things, but I just know that like it's totally inconsistent who gets it, when, where, and why. And this is like a great example, like because they had someone steal their goods and try and sell it on Amazon. These are my words. That led to something being gated, you know?
I'm going to read off a list of brands, and if this is helpful to anyone listening, okay? If you know someone at one of these brands, the Wall Street Journal put out an article about how carrier theft is on the rise, cargo theft is on the rise, and there were some recent changes with California legislation that didn't make theft easier, but that made it more difficult to prosecute. Okay. So I'm going to read off some brands, and without comment, I'm not saying that they are also stolen goods or that they are also goods of a questionable origin, but I'm going to say the same entity and organized operation that was for sure selling goods of a questionable origin for our client was also selling PlayStation, was also selling Hanes, was also selling PJ Masks, was also selling Le Sport Sack, was also selling Think Baby sunscreen, was also selling kids protein shakes. I will not name that brand out of an abundance of caution and to protect confidentiality. They were also selling Dove, Pedigree's Choice. They were also selling Neutrogena. They were selling Mommy's Bliss. You have a kid, right? Think about that for half a second. Like that's stuff that goes to an infant. They were also selling Hill's Science Diet. They were selling Eva NYC. They were selling Method. You know Method and how big Method is. They were selling Think Sport. They were selling Munchkin Falls. They were selling Good Cook. They were selling More Hills Science Diet dog food. They were selling Soft Sheen. They were selling Baby Brezza. They were selling Munchkins, like bubble bath dispensers. It's a very eclectic mix. They were selling Shark robot vacuums, right? Think Roomba. They were selling Power XL air fryers, Caesar adult wet dog food, Dove men's body care. This is a boring list, but there is going to be some. But from a share perspective, if you have a friend at one of these brands that can benefit from our research and you want to and you want to compare notes, and maybe you've had a container or two stolen, on the good guy side of the line, we're happy to share some of these. We learned Pro Body Pilates, Seventh Generation, Chesapeake Bay Candles, Greenworks Cordless Trimmers, Spring Valley, Fender Acoustic Guitar Cases, and the list goes on and on and on, right down to like...
That's a variety. Like, they could have stolen some trucks that were on their way to Amazon.
The one that made me laugh was they were also selling large cigar ashtray, like outdoor ashtrays. And I had to wonder, are they smoking celebratory cigars, right?
Yeah.
After each one of these potential incidents, I don't know, but I can say I don't want to interfere with a an active law enforcement investigation, but this, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, like this story is pretty crazy. And
it's like Fast and the Furious semi-trucker edition. It really is. Yeah, that's how it felt like. It felt like we were in a movie, bro.
The thing is, I feel like people listening to this podcast, we're like one of the few people that are like, we know the immediate value of those goods, like, because we know how you can sell them, you know? I've never thought about looking at a truck and being like, that's $1 million of inventory right there. And like, why is that not guarded the same way that, like, I mean, they'll guard a truck that has like $50,000 of cash when $1 million of inventory, that's basically like cash from someone that knows how to do just like, I don't know, an hour of work.
The principle is inventory is cash. And I would say there are prevent and detect mechanisms that COOs and CMOs and CDOs and CEOs can put in their supply chain to GPS track containers, to ID check drivers. Sometimes there's a language barrier. Maybe it's a driver with a CDL who speaks Spanish who shows up and there's a language barrier.
It's not very hard to think about, like, a driver can take a bribe to look the other way for like, I don't know, 5 minutes, and then their friends come and just like grab it, and like the driver's just gonna be like, I don't know, just happened.
What was put on the BOL, and I can say this carefully, was it included the word Phantom Express, which in retrospect, if anyone here is working in operations and sees a BOL with Phantom Express Trucking Inc., that was what the individuals who took the trucks without authorization, that's what they were putting on the BOL. Now, that's not what they would show up with, legitimate carrier documentation and active USDOT number that checked out. But the BOL documentation, and I'm protecting client confidentiality here, I'm not telling you who the brands are that were affected. And the brands don't really want to talk about it for good reason. All I can say is, you mess with the piranha, you get the horns. Like, you mess with, we have a saying in Texas, you mess with the bull, you get the horns. Like,
there you go. Well, speaking of piranha, like, I mean, you have had a lot of brands exit for a lot of money. A lot of your clients have exited for north of $100 million. Why do you think that's the case?
I think that the agencies that stick around the longest have the best reputation, and the best reputation comes off of execution, doing the best work. And I started Piranha because I needed to make more money so that my wife could stay home with my two sets of twins. I think we've had more clients exit for $100 million or more because we have had more failures than anybody else. And those failures have taught us principles, and those lessons are written in blood. And so for every brand we've had that's exited for $100 million, we have had other brands that didn't exit for $100 million where we learned things. When we analyzed, think of like a modified version of Ray Dalio's principles. We've learned principles for Amazon. A lot of guys have offshored the operations to Pakistan or India or the Philippines, and that's their entire back end. And I think there's some wonderful people in those locations that work really, really hard. Our operations are unique in that we are primarily US-based. We've been 100% US-based up until the last 6 months. We have added a couple of people who are insanely good at their jobs. One, or, you know, a few people in Costa Rica. We had an employee move to Spain who we hired in the US. And so all of 100% of our account managers are based in the US. 90, 95% of our team is still US based. But our approach is one that comes from like learning what works and what doesn't. And if you look at our failures, our patterns are, you know, there's three limitations on our skill set. Number one is repeat purchase rate. Number two is competitive positioning in the marketplace. And number three is organic review rating. So if you work with shitty products, or if you work with brands that have a low repeat purchase rate or are too high or too low on price, it's not going to go well. So as an agency, those are limitations on our skill set. The way you get $100 million brands, you identify trends coming a long ways off, you partner with the absolute best entrepreneurial teams, and then you help drive execution forward. So you can work hard, work long, work smart. Any two preclude the third. At Piranha, we try to build the best team with the hardest working people and keep a single digit account to account manager ratio. We can't take all the credit. The credit goes to the brands and the founders and the entrepreneurs that we work with. We're humbled to work with just some awesome brands.
You've blown up in the number of clients that you have, and that means your time gets split even further. And you personally, you know, you've had the most experience on Amazon in your business, spend less time per client. What do you spend most of your time doing when you're like trying to like actually make a difference for a client? Yeah, like if you give 10 minutes to a client today, what's the biggest impact that you can make?
The effective ratio has to go up and the impact has to improve, right? So as you develop in your career, you go from having like a tiny hammer to like a big one. And then you go from a lot of trial and error to like, I know exactly what we should do. The principle is leverage. You have to get leverage on your time. The number one thing I've done is reinvest in our team. We reward loyalty. We reward performance. We have a meritocracy. We've added things like quarterly bonuses. And it's not just a one-man operation. Like, I was gone for 8 days and we had 7 people start that I had never interviewed or met. That was scary. Like, it took me 2 weeks to like schedule one-on-ones to meet them and say hi, right? And I like to have a personal touch, and I like to know, everyone that works for me. The cool thing now is culturally we've invested in long-term talent and that's paid off.
But are you still setting the strategy with clients, or do your account managers do that?
As you scale, escalation scale, and you start to develop like a strategy where, let's say if it was the military, you go from having a small team to having generals of 50, generals of 100, generals of 1,000, right? And I spend most of my time working on the gnarliest problems for the biggest clients, but I will still take the brand new client call. Hey, should we launch this in a 10 count or a 12 count? And for me, it's about systematizing the training and the learning. And we have great people at Piranha that help do that. Honestly, Piranha is a lot bigger than just me now.
I once shared with you a brand that I was going to work with. It was like a treadmill brand. And I don't know if you remember this, but like, you know, you gave back like 6, like, you know, like easy improvements. It was like, okay, do this, take this picture, make it look like this. Okay. And I think you did this with less than like 4 minutes of looking at it. You're just like, it was like all instinctual. Do you think those critiques on a brand's position on Amazon that you have developed, is that a core piece of like, you're just like, you see a product, you see a brand, you're like, okay, let's position this way. Has that become like a second nature for you?
I think it's become as natural as like drinking water, getting up in the morning. Like, and I think, again, the principle, and nobody wants to hear about your wins, but everybody loves to hear about your failures. And the principle, it's a true principle in business. Your failures teach you more than your wins. You need to be grateful for the times when you failed. My superpower, I can tell if it's a zero or a hero. And where most people get wrong with strategy is they can see like A to B, B to C, C to D. Where it gets murky is in the middle, where let's say you're launching a sunscreen brand and you're like, okay, we want it to be reef safe. But then when they get to like retail price point bundle pack analysis, they're like, I don't know, do we make it in a 2-pack, a 4-pack? Do we sell it for $20, $30? What do we do? For me, I can, like, we're working on a $15 billion brand that I can't name. And one of the largest private equity firms in North America that I also cannot name out of confidentiality came to us and said, we want you to analyze this business. We think there's some things that are broken. In less than 7 days, it's become ultra clear based on some data what the correct path forward is. Now, some of these things are painful. Some of these things are not. Some of it is half intuition. Some of it is half data scientist. But when you're an entrepreneur and there's a high level of care and experience, you cannot replicate 10 years of failures and wins in the category. You have had years, right? You and I have been at it for around the same amount of time. I don't want to say we're OGs in the space, but we're well out of 1-2 man operations in a garage.
It's been 11 years. And the more I say that, the more I'm like, wow, I'm not sure if every one of those years I learned the lessons that I wanted to.
One of the principles for us now is give back. The reason that I'm even talking about this on a highly sensitive subject is just to give back. Like, if other people can benefit from what we learned, like, my goal is not to charge for it, but like, forward this to one of those brands. If anyone's been a victim of container theft or had issues, like, we launched a new business called Refund Hawk to just audit and get money back for clients. In the first 4.5 months, it got back $1 million for clients. We analyzed one client the other day. There's almost $1 million sitting on the table in refunds just for that client. That's not necessarily like a theft related thing, but that is free money that can go back. We've never had a better retention rate. We've never grown at this fast of a clip. And we're a couple clients away from punching $1 million a month for the first time. That's never happened before. And we just want to keep doing a great job. We're a function of our clients. Our clients have never grown faster or done better. And I'm grateful for the people that have trusted us with their business because...
Well, the truth is, I know, like, I've had hours long conversations with you. We could go on forever. And in fact, you know, we'll get you back on the pod sometime and hopefully we have fewer technical setup issues, but it takes a lot of cuts to learn how to get better. And then like ultimately once you get those, like, I mean, I built this podcast 4 years ago and I swear the first like 10 episodes, all I'm doing is talking about all of our mistakes. And so love that mindset that you have. And I think it shows really well. Well, Jed, thank you so much for coming on. Sharing that story. I know that the story is not quite over because there still is some final chapters. So if you're not following Jed on LinkedIn, he's a good follow. And you know, maybe you'll get the final pieces of that story.
There's also a networking group that's free to join called Trillion Dollar Sellers that we created.
Oh, yes.
I need to be more active in it. I've been limited on what I can say because of there's an active law enforcement investigation.
Yeah, you created that group and like it's a good conversation every day. There's some high level stuff there.
And there's some big brands that lurk and occasionally provide value. My goal there was like, you know, you have $1 million seller, $1 billion seller. They charge a lot to be in those groups. They're good friends of mine. I have respect for both of them. I wanted to create a free group that was just purely like on a give back basis. Like let's get 10 Amazon masterminds. And it was basically the genesis was the blackjack table conversations we would have where we don't care about blackjack. We don't care about losing money. We just want to talk, shop, and swap good ideas.
It's there. So if people want to get into it and you are an aspiring $1 trillion seller, reach out to Jed. I lurk and I comment and share. Well, anyways, we better wrap up. This is turning into one of the longer episodes, but like for good reason, because Jed has so much to share. And I just had to ask a few extra questions after your story, because I'd like to know how you guys work. So thanks for coming on the pod, Jed.
Anytime. Scott, I love what you're doing. And if anyone needs some Piranha help, they're more than welcome to reach out. I love the podcast. It's one of the few that I listen to on a regular basis. I love it. Keep it up. And in the meantime, like, let's continue. My core strategy is let's be friends. Let's be allies. So if we can help someone out there listening to this, feel free to reach out.
I'm sure you've helped many people. Okay. Well, with that, we'll wrap up and we'll catch Jed on the next time that we bring him on to the Smartest Amazon Seller.
Take care, brother. Good to see you. Good to catch up.
All right. See ya.
One, two, three.